Well, good afternoon. It's good to see you this evening. What a beautiful day to worship God, and we're glad you've made your way to be with us on this occasion to open His Word and study from it. It was former Prime Minister Winston Churchill, and once describing Russia, said this. He said, Russia is a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. And I think sometime when we open to the book of Revelation, we might concur with Churchill that Revelation is a mystery, a riddle, strange and confusing. And because of that, and how people look at that, it's been really given rise to people just using the book of Revelation as a punching bag. They have made this book into whatever they wanted to say. And it results in a lot of different things that have been said about this book and what people seem to find in this book. For instance, there are some commentators that on the book of Revelation we say that in the book of Revelation, we can find the date or dates for the end of the world. Others say that we can find prophecies of gunpowder and cannons and steamboats and railroads. They say that people such as Martin Luther and Napoleon and Mussolini and 2 billion Chinese communists are found in this book. And they'll say that recently that we'll find Black Hawk helicopters and tanks and thermonuclear war. And so you just take the book and you really just make it what you want it to be. And the reason why they get away with this is because people just are so confused by the book itself. Now, we talked about the book a few weeks ago. We talked about the Battle of Armageddon that comes from Revelation chapter 16. Tonight I want to talk about what comes from Revelation chapter 13 as we talk about the mark of the beast. This is one of those things that you'll hear a lot about. The number 666 is a number that a lot of people are fearful about. And so I think it's good for us tonight to open up the book of Revelation, not be intimidated by it, but talk about what does it mean, this mark of the beast, this number 666. Now, I didn't mention this so much the last time we opened the book up, but the book of Revelation is written to the seven churches of Asia. We know this because we find this in verse 4 there, chapter 1. It is something that comes to John while he's on the island of Patmos, verse 9 there of chapter 1. And when he wrote the book, we really don't know. I think it's safe to say that he wrote the book from maybe 60 A.D. to 95 A.D. That'll get on the daters in there, the early and late daters. But John wrote this book as he saw these visions, and he wrote this down. Chapters 2 and 3 pretty much deal with the seven churches, as Jesus addresses the things that those churches are dealing with. And if you look at those churches, most of them are dealing with apostasy. In fact, some have wandered so far off the way that Jesus said, you better get back straight or I'm going to come and remove your lampstand. And so as these churches were dealing with internal apostasy, they were also dealing with external apostasy. And I think that's what Revelation chapter 13 is all about. The external apostasy that churches we're dealing with back in the first century. Now, chapter 13 of Revelation is just an extension of what begins in chapter 12. If you know your chapter 12, you know that chapter 12 begins with this description of this woman giving birth and this dragon. You've probably seen pictures as they depict what's happening in chapter 12. We've got this pregnant lady and she's standing there and she's preparing to give birth, and there's this big old dragon standing under there waiting to devour the child as soon as the child's delivered. Well, we know that that child there represents or is the Christ child, Jesus Christ. And I think what we find in Revelation chapter 12 is the efforts made by many throughout the centuries of trying to disrupt the promised seed of the Christ. And we see this throughout the Old Testament. We see this certainly in the days when Christ was born, the decree of Herod to kill all the children of Bethlehem and the vicinity. But we know that the dragon is not successful. Now, look at the last verse there of chapter 12. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So he's unsuccessful in destroying the Christ child, and so he turns his attention then to Christ's children, the church. And I think that's the offspring here of the woman here. Now, knowing that, then we come into chapter 13. And in chapter 13, we have this introduction of these two beasts. And as I read this, you've probably heard about these beasts before, and you've probably seen maybe pictures as people try to depict them. I've got some pictures here, but we'll see what these beasts are all about. Revelation chapter 13, starting in verse 1. And I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on its horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and the mouth was like that of a lion. And here's something that kind of may be similar to that beast. It's a terrible-looking beast made up, you might say, three parts of an animal. And so you've got this beast that comes out of the sea. And it goes on, verse 4, talks about the worship of the beast. So they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast who is able to make war with him? And the war is found there in verses 6 and 7. Then he opened his mouth and blasphemed against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Now, John does not tell us who this beast is that comes from the sea. We know there's some connection, certainly, to the dragon, which we read about in chapter 12, which we identify as being Satan, but that's really all we know about the beast right here. But there's another beast. Again, Revelation chapter 13, starting in verse 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercised all the authority of the first beast in his presence and caused the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on earth and to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here's our verse. Here is wisdom. Let him who has the understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it's the number of man, his number, 666. You've ever wondered where that comes from? There you are. Revelation chapter 13, verse 18. Now again, John does not identify who this beast is. Well, we do find that in chapters 16, 19, and 20, the beast becomes what is called the false prophet. And so we have these two beasts, don't we? We have a beast that comes from the sea, and we have this beast that comes from the land. There's the land and sea beasts. Now, here's what I believe concerning these beasts. I believe this, I can go back, can't I? The sea beast here. Notice again that it's made up of three different types of animals. Now, we've been studying Daniel in our Sunday morning class in the auditorium. We haven't got there yet, but in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel sees a vision of beasts that represent nations, empires. You know, we talked about this in chapter 2 of Daniel. But in chapter 7, starting about verse 2, there Daniel sees the same animal imagery to represent the three great empires of the ancient world: Babylon, the Medes and Persian, and Greece. They're represented by the leopard, the bear, and the lion. Now, here we've got a beast that has those three parts, but he's a different type of beast. We also know from Daniel chapter 7, there are four beasts. There's four great nations. And I think what we have represented here is that the fourth kingdom is really a combination of, a composite of all the three who came before them. Now, knowing world history, we know, we've talked about this again in our class, that of that image that Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar he saw of those three kingdoms, or four kingdoms, that is, Babylon, Medes and Persian, and Greece, there is that fourth one, and that's the kingdom of the Roman Empire. So I believe that this sea beast here that is being described here in Revelation chapter 13, that has all this different odd-looking looks to it and various things, that's Rome. That's the fourth empire of Daniel chapter 7. And so we have this Roman Empire that comes forth like this sea beast. Now again, we've got that beast. Well, how about this one over here, this lamb beast here? Well, the lamb beast looks like a lamb, But he speaks like a dragon. And again, Satan is the dragon. And there's a connection between the land beast and the sea beast. Go back and look at your text again there. Revelation chapter 13, verse 12, the land beast encourages people to bow down and worship the sea beast. And he does these signs and amazes the people. It's my belief that what the land beast represents is the imperial cults that were set up during the time of the Roman Empire to force people to worship and submit to Rome. Remember, the Caesar at that time declared himself to be a god. And whatever the god of Rome was, had to be your god if you were subjected to Rome. And so you've got this great empire. You've got the Roman Empire represented by the sea beast. Well, you need somebody that goes out and polices people, forces people to submit to Rome. Well, how do you do that? Well, then you've got this wing, this arm, this land beast, and its culture of corruption and its cultures of Caesar worship and all these various institutionalized imperial worship that causes people or forces people to submit to Rome. You see, if you were under the authority of Rome, they didn't want you to be different. And they certainly didn't want you to be odd. They wanted you to be a good Roman. And it was up to the land beast to cause that. Now think about that just for a moment. You're a Christian living in the first century. Rome has conquered your nation. You're subjected to them. And so you've got the imperial Rome, that empire, represented by the sea beast. But that's a long way off. You're living in Judea. That's thousands of miles away off. But then you've got the arm of Rome, represented by the land beast, who's there amongst the people in those various provinces and regions, forcing people to submit to the authority of Rome and the Caesar. I think that's what's being represented here in chapter 13. Now, again, you can imagine how this would have caused Christians trouble. Christians were not to bow down to some type of earthly ruler. And for a period of time, Rome, and I've mentioned this, I think, before in classes, that Rome kind of kept its hands off of Christianity. For a long time, Rome looked at Christianity as just being an extension of Judaism. You know, most of them were Jews, and they referred to the same scriptures that the Jews did, Christians would. They believed in Messiah, who was to be Jewish. And, you know, his birthplace was to be in Judea. And so Rome pretty much thought, well, Christianity, these Christians out there, that's just an extension of Judaism. And they'd already approved Judaism, so Christianity, for all practical purposes, was approved for a period of time. But then Rome started to notice that, those Christians aren't very well by the Jews. In fact, the Jews are persecuting them. We need to investigate this. And when they started to investigate what Christianity really was, they found out that it was not an extension of Judaism. It was something totally different. Oh, it might find roots in Judaism, but it's totally different. And that's why the Jews hated Christians. That's why the Jews persecuted Christians. And so Rome started to see Christians as a distinct and different group. And when that happened, it became hard for Rome to tolerate Christians. And so they turned their attention towards Christianity. There were arrests and tortures. People taken from their homes and thrown sometimes even to the lions. Now that is a rare case that they were actually thrown to wild animals. Mostly they were taken, tortured, and then set on fire to light the night skies. But most persecution at first by Rome was done on a local basis. It wasn't really empire-wide until the 3rd or 4th century A.D. Most of it was really done on a local basis. Now, if you had a bad guy who was a representative of Rome, well, he's going to be bad towards Christians, and that's what happened in various places. Let me show you a letter that comes from around 110 to 111 A.D., and this came from the area that the seven churches of Asia were located. It's written by a man by the name of Pliny, and he's writing Emperor Trajan about what's going on there in that region with Christians. And here's what he has to say. I don't know if you can read this or not. He said, "It is my practice, my lord, to refer to you all matters concerning which I am doubt. For who can better give guidance to my hesitation or inform my ignorance? I have never before participated in trials of Christians, So I do not know what offenses are to be punished or investigated or to what extent. And I've been not a little hesitant as to whether there should be any distinction on account of age or no difference recognized between the very young and the more mature. Is pardon to be granted for repentance? Or if a man has once been a Christian, is it irrelevant whether he has ceased to be one? Is the name itself to be punished, even without offenses, or only the offenses perpetrated in connection with the name? Meanwhile, in the case of those who were denounced to me as Christians, I have followed the following procedure. Now, here's the procedure. I interrogate them as to whether they were Christians. Those who confess, I interrogate a second and a third time, threatening them with punishment. Those who persist, I order executed. For I had no doubt that whatever the nature of their creed, stubbornness and inflexible stubbornness surely deserves to be punished. Now let me just sum up this letter. I don't find these Christians to be criminals. I find them to be stubborn and nonconformists. And I just cannot tolerate that. And I know, good emperor, you could not tolerate that also. And so that's why I put them to death. You know why they were not good Roman citizens? Why they were stubborn? Because they were committed to God. That's why. And for that, they were executed, put to death. Daily, Christians were pressured to conform to society, to go along with worship of the emperor, to be a good citizen and not a threat to Rome. And if you happen not to do that, if you refuse to even burn that pinch of incense to Caesar as God each year, well, the land beast could kill you. And he would often do that. History tells us that many died by the hands of Rome during the 3rd and 4th century. Or maybe they won't kill you, they'll just ruin you economically. They'll close down your business. They'll tell people not to shop over there where that Christian has his goods laying out. Avoid him. And this force you into bankruptcy and ruin. Back to chapter 13, verse 17. No one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast. You see that? And so you could lose your life, you could lose your career, your jobs. You become social outcast because you do not have the mark of the beast. All right, well, what's the mark of the beast? What is that? Well, if you do a search on the mark of the beast, here's what you might find. Some believe that the mark of the beast are going to be microchips or barcodes embedded under our skin. You know, everything else has a barcode. Why not put them, you know, put people with barcodes? And don't be surprised that some brilliant politician sometime comes up with that. Others believe that is to be a tattoo that will be placed on our foreheads or a hand. Again, go back to Revelation chapter 13, verse 16. There speaks about those marks being on foreheads and hands. And then some have suggested that this is a reference to an ancient numbering system called Gematria. Now, maybe you've heard of that or maybe you haven't. This is relatively new that somebody has come up with this idea that what we have there in this number, 666, is a way to identify somebody from history, somebody during that time, in a very coded way through this use of gematria. And what this basically boils down to is that each letter of the alphabet is given a number. In fact, let me give you an illustration of that. Latin gematria is this. I equals 1. V equals 5. X equals 10. C equals 100. And M should be 1,000. And so if you see somebody's name, you see, and my name, Buck, I don't know what a B is, I know what a U is, but a C is 100. So I at least got 100 points or 100, you know, under my name here. But what they do is they take these names, you see, and they see how they relate to gematria here, and thus they come up with a number. You can do that with your name. You take your name tonight, sit down and find some of these Latin or Hebrew or Greek uses of gematria here, and you figure out what's the value of your name. Well, because of this, some have thought that perhaps what was being described here in Revelation chapter 13 is that the number 666 has reference to Nero, who was emperor during the first century. And how they get that is because they add up all the numbers or the letters and the corresponding numbers of Nero Caesar, or Caesar Nero, and it comes up to 666. Well, there have been others, however, reformers, said that, well, 666 refers to the Pope, the Vicar of the Son of God. And I assume if you get out your Latin and just this code right here, and you sit down and you write out Vicar of the Son of God, it comes out to 666. Now, here's the problem with gematria. And this was pointed out by a man by the name of George Salmon in a book, Introduction to the New Testament. He says that every person's name, or just about every name, can eventually come up or be counted as 666. And here's his point. He says, you know, if you got a name and you're looking for a number, well, you can fudge the numbers and you can fudge the name enough to come up with that number. You can change the spelling of it. You can add things to the name. Nero, again, those who believe that Nero is the mark of the beast here, 666, they don't just go by the name Nero. They have to add Nero Caesar, you see. Because unless you add the Caesar part, you're not going to come up with 666. The same with the Pope, Vicar of the Son of God. I don't know if he's ever called himself that, but I know he calls himself the Vicar of God. Well, if you just go Vicar of God, that's not going to come up to 666. So you add some more names in there, and you come up with the number you're looking for, 666. And so be very careful if you ever come across this gematria here and somebody tries to convince you. Well, you know, you add up those numbers and here's what it comes to, and that's this person over here. That's why I mentioned earlier that the name Napoleon, Mussolini, and others have been found in the book of Revelation because somebody has sat down and pulled out their Latin or pulled out their Hebrew or pulled out their Greek and given numbers to various letters, and they've come up with those people there. It's just people playing actually with the numbers, you might say. Now, what does it actually mean in this mark of the beast? I want you to go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 real quick, though. Because marking somebody or sealing somebody has been long talked about before Revelation chapter 13. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting in verse 6 there, as God is instructing his people as they are preparing to enter the land, he says this. He said, "These words which I command you today shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes." Where have you heard of foreheads and hands before? Well, back here in Revelation chapter 13, don't you? God talks about marking his own people, sealing those who are his. Now, he wasn't suggesting that you write on your forehead or on your hand something or tattoo that on there. But what he was saying is that my people are identified. I know who belongs to me. That's what God is saying. By the way they act, by what they say, how they worship me, all those things indicate that they are mine. Now, you go to Revelation chapter 7. Revelation chapter 7 in verse 3. John sees the saints who were sealed, marked by God. "Do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the servants of God on their foreheads. And I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 of all the tribes of children of Israel were sealed." Now, they didn't have something on their foreheads. They hadn't been tattooed or marked with a marker. But God is saying, "I know my people, and I've sealed them. They are mine." Now, keep that in mind as a contrast here with the mark of the beast here. You know, Satan knows who belongs to him. He knows as well as God knows who belongs to him. He knows by the way they talk, the way they act. He knows if they conform and compromise. And when they do, they've got the mark of the beast on them. You see, the mark of the beast is a counterfeit to the seal of God. It's not a literal mark. It's those who conform to the world rather than be transformed. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 through 2. There it is right there. That's the mark of the beast. Those who conform rather than transform. Those who worship the beast, Satan, the dragon. Those who submit to him. And folks, he's still making subjects to this day. The mark of the beast has not ceased. It did not end with the end of the book of Revelation. The, the beast is still marking people today. And let me tell you what I mean by that. You know, for a long time in our country, we've had freedom to worship without anybody standing out front of our door there and saying, you can't go in. And I never had somebody from the government call me up and say, I heard you preach so-and-so. I don't want you to do that anymore. If you do, we're going to come in there and we're going to shut you down. That hadn't happened yet. And I say yet. Because it doesn't take but a few votes from a Supreme Court or a man in the wrong office to stop all that. I don't know if you paid attention to what's happened in our country in the last few years. We've been threatened, whether you know it or not, by what we can say and what we can't say from pulpits. You know what they're wanting out of us? They're wanting us to conform, not be transformed. That's what they want. They want us to be like everybody else. See, we don't want you Christians to act this way or say this. We want you to say what we say in Washington, D.C. Because, you see, we're the government. Now, I may upset some people, but I'm going to tell you. The beast right now is Washington, D.C. It's not Rome any longer. They're long gone. The beast right now is Washington, D.C. And I'll tell you, that's maybe the sea beast, but the land beast is political correctness. It's forcing us to talk the way they have approved for us to talk and to act. How many of you ever voted for same-sex marriage? None of you, because it was never on a ballot, was it? How many of you ever voted to open up bathrooms to every pervert that he wants to walk into? None of us, did we? But why have we seen that happen in our nation? And why have we seen that in businesses? Because the land and the sea beast are in cahoots with one another, and they say, that's what you got to do. Now, what are we supposed to do? Well, they said, you better conform. That's what you better do. If you don't conform, we're going to shut down your business. You ask that baker what was out in Washington or somewhere that refused to bake a cake for a gay couple. They shut them down. And last I heard, I forget how many thousands and thousands of dollars they have had to spend in litigation. You see, the mark of the beast continues. It's happening right now. And it will continue to happen. As we see those who oppose the Lord and His people try to make us conform and not be transformed. I was told many years ago by a gospel preacher, he said, and we were talking about this subject, he said, you know what's going to happen is this first. They're going to tell us no longer can we talk about this particular subject. And if you do, if we hear that you do, we're going to tax you. You know, I thought about that over the years, and I think that's true. You know, right now we're exempt from taxes. But you let the government dictate what we can say from this pulpit. And they threaten us if we don't say what they say, well, we'll just tax you, you see. And if that doesn't work, well, then we'll just bar the doors and maybe carry you off to prison. Folks, we need to be aware of the beast today. And not be conformed to that. Not have the number 666 on our foreheads. But have the seal of God. Let me show you what the Lord says here in Revelation. Look in chapter 14, verse 10. Of those who worship the beast, it says, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. That's what you get if you worship the beast. But in the same book, Revelation chapter 20, verse 4, here are those who are sealed by God. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for the witnesses of Jesus and for the word of God, who did not worship the beast or his image and had not received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Those are the ones that were transformed. Those are the ones that were willing to give their lives for the Lord. Hopefully we'll never come to that in our nation. Hopefully it won't. But don't be surprised if it doesn't. Oh, sometimes I say, Lord, come quickly. Because of all the things we have to put up with in this world. Well, maybe I'll give you something to think about. Something to pray about. That we remain transformed from the world and not conformed. If you're outside the body of Christ this evening, I urge you to consider the situation you find yourself in this very hour. Don't wait another minute. Make the right preparations for eternity now. We can help you in any way. Make that known to us now as we stand and sing the song.